Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates, and it is 11:04 Central Standard Time on Tuesday, February 4th, and we are in our conversations all week about the seventh commandment. What is that seventh commandment? The seventh commandment, you shall not steal. What does this mean? We should fear and love God so that we do not take our neighbor's money or possessions or get them in any dishonest way, but help him improve and protect his possessions. We're going to talk about that in just a little bit. We're going to talk about helping our neighbor and protecting his possessions and income. And what better picture of that to look at today than a small business owner. So we're going to talk with Jeff and Ellie Koopman here in just a little bit about their experience with a small business right here in the St. Louis area in just a minute. I want to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University Wisconsin, for supporting the program. To find out more about Concordia University Wisconsin, just go to our website, kfuo.org. Look for that sponsor section. Look for the CUW logo there in the sponsor section. Click on that, and that'll take you to their page. Well, it is a cold and chilly day here in St. Louis, and half of the Koopman family made it over, and they're probably going to have to rush out the door here in just a little while to go get the rest of the Koopman family as weather is changing here and schools are being called off. So we're going to try to get through as much as we can of the conversation today, but knowing that they've got to probably go take care of the rest of the family, that's part of family life, right, here in the Midwest. So joining us in studio today, Jeff and Ellie Koopman, owners of El Salon and Spa in Eureka, Missouri, not too far, right down the road. And I'm sure some of our listeners have been there before. I know our family goes there and a lot of other listeners. So we're going to talk with them about their experience. Good to have you in studio today, Jeff.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
And Ellie, good to have you here.
Thank you.
And we also have another guest in the studio today. Who else do we have here?
Maya.
And Maya is she co-owner as well?
She may as well be.
She's VP, huh?
There you go.
Maya's joining us in studio today as well. And that's just part of family life and owning a family business. You're keeping the family together all the time. I want to hear about your dreams and the Koopman family and what led up to the business that you have today, which is a successful business right outside St. Louis, still in the outside the St. Louis area. Tell us a little bit about the history of the Koopman family. Who wants to start with that?
I'll go ahead and start. There's six of us. Ellie and I have four kids. Grant's eight, Ada's seven, Emma's five, and Maya's four. So got a good young family. And that's kind of got us going with wanting to start a business, you know, was being able to spend that time with the family, being able to really just have that time free and to...
Because you have lots of free time with your business, right?
Yeah. Well, it didn't pan out quite that way, but, you know, it's going good so far, and it's getting off the ground to where we can spend that valuable time with them, too.
Now, when did you all meet? When did the Koopman family start?
Jeff and I met when we were nine. long time ago, we were in fifth grade, and we've basically been best friends ever since. And we used to live in Chicago area, and his family relocated here when we were in middle school. And when we were 19, we reconnected, and I moved down to St. Louis, and we got married shortly after.
Wow.
So, and it's been a long time.
When did that seed get planted in your mind that you wanted to be business owners? When did you start thinking about that?
I think our family kind of generated that thought. Like I said, we wanted to be able to provide for our family the best way possible, to be able to have that financial freedom to where we can spend the time with the kids.
And just have flexibility in their future and have an investment that would carry on, you know.
Do you have that flexibility?
The flexibility is getting there. It's getting better every day. We're learning and growing. The business has been open for about 3 years now, so it's getting a little bit easier all the time, and we're still marching our way towards that goal.
Now, when you first started thinking about owning your business, were there lots of different ideas of what type of business it would be, or had it always been your plan to have a salon and spa?
In my mind, it's always been a salon and spa. Ellie's phenomenal at what she does. She's got clients from all over the place, and she just is a she's got a special gift for networking and for doing what she does, and her passion comes out in her work, and just really, really good at networking and really good at what she does. So in my mind, there was really no other choice, because she was just kind of meant to lead by example as far as being a hairstylist and cosmetologist.
So you have to be...
That's really sweet.
Ellie, in your business, you not only have to be a good... What makes a good stylist? I think Jeff's really pointing to a good part of it here.
I feel like the most important thing in our industry is just really being able to communicate with your guest and have the experience just be about them and really hearing them and giving them the full experience of being able to relax and to feel beautiful about themselves. And it's just so much more than just having them leave with their hair looking beautiful. It's more about really listening to them. And there's a lot of counseling that goes on in our profession. So
there is, people don't come in just for a haircut. I mean, yeah, there are probably some clients that just come in for a haircut or style or color or whatever, but they really come in for the social aspect of it, don't they?
Right. Yes.
That's really an important part of it. So there's more to it than just being a stylist who creates a good haircut or a good style. That's an important part of it. Having that skill, that knowing your trade or having that skill is an important part of it. But obviously, being able to as you said, Jeff, to network with people, being able to listen to your clients and to visit with them during the time that they're there sounds like an important part of what you do. And I'm sure that's an important part of a lot of businesses. Sure, there are some businesses where a lot of it's behind the scenes. You don't interact a whole lot with the clients, but it sounds like this was a perfect match for you and for your personalities.
Right.
As you started developing your business plan, what are the things that you needed to start thinking about for this type of business? What are the things that you really had to give consideration? I know you wanted flexibility for your family. You wanted a successful business. You wanted to use your talents. What are the things that you really had to give a lot of consideration to?
You obviously, there's the obvious things, you know, locations, different product lines, you know, what you want to do with stuff like that. But more than that, there's, you know, one of the biggest things we dealt with was how far do we want to go with it? Do we want to just have maybe a couple of hair stations and call it good and keep it simple, which is not the way it really turned out. You know, it turns out we've got now 11 people working for us, and we do hair, nails, aesthetics, massage, pretty much everything. We're a full service spa. So a lot of it was in how far we wanted to take it.
So you had a lot to consider. You wanted it small, but now it's expanded. What about who was involved? How did you make decisions about who would be involved, and who did you invite to be a part of this business venture?
I think a lot of the, as far as who is involved, I mean, obviously we consulted with family. Family is very important in the whole thing, but you know, Ellie and I, did a lot of the decision making. We, you know, it was something that was going to directly affect our family and our everyday life. So that was something that, you know, we weighed heavily, and we talked about it for probably a good 3-4 months, you know, in planning and everything else, trying to get it all going and decide if to or if not to.
Ellie, you made a gesture when he said 3 to 4 months. Was it longer than that?
No, it actually probably wasn't even quite that long. It was a pretty fast progression of things. It was really finding the right location, and we started looking, and there was something available right when we were looking that we fell in love with as a property, which goes hand in hand with all of this, is that the building that we're in, we had to completely gut and renovate and start from scratch with, pretty much. So that was a big factor in our timeline and the process of all of it.
And that's so, where a lot of Jeff's talent comes into the scene here. You found the property. What did you think when you first saw that property, Jeff?
I don't think most people would have seen it as a salon. It was an old small Victorian style house with shag carpets and drop ceilings and you know,
a
bathtub.
You got rid of the shag carpet.
Yeah, we got rid of the shag carpet. But, you know, that's one of the things that I do is rehabbing on the side. So I kind of saw it for what it could be rather than what it was. And we kind of just went from there.
And that really is kind of the vision that you have to have when you're stepping out into a small business like that. You got to see it for what it could be rather than what it is right now.
Absolutely.
Absolutely, yeah. For sure.
So you found this property, you had this vision for what it would be. What did it take to make that happen? Obviously, a lot of elbow grease on your part as a family.
Yeah, it's a lot of hard work, a lot of hours. We were both obviously working at the time. So it was kind of in-betweens and late nights and stuff like that. But it was a good probably 8 months worth of manual labor, you know, nights, weekends, 70, 80-hour weeks, trying to balance the family life and balance getting that thing done so that we can get open and get started.
I feel like on my end, it was interesting, too, because we didn't have a staff when we were starting the process. So trying to interview people and help them to see our vision and where we were going with the building and with the business and bringing them into a complete construction zone, you know, without a business already existing there was an interesting experience for me and a good learning experience for us, you know.
How did you, as you're in this building phase, you're building clients, you're building you're rehabbing a building, trying to flesh out this plan that you have for a business, trying to keep your family from, you know, going crazy with all the hours that you're working. What kind of support did it take? Who else helped keep everything together?
You know, we actually we had a lot of support. You know, extended family helped us out tremendously. Wasn't always where we anticipated it, the help coming from. But we had aunts that reached out and were either help with manual labor in the salon, help with watching kids. We had friends that were very, very helpful and would take the kids for a few hours so LA could come and help. It was tremendous to see how everyone was able to pull together and help us through a time where we really needed it.
So it's kind of like, you know, if we go back to early American days, kind of like a barn raising. In a sense, you know,
the whole,
you had this sense of support. Was that encouraging to have that support and to have all these friends and extended family that were, you know, that were pitching in wherever it was needed?
It is. It's really reassuring to have family back. Yeah. I mean, you always know that they're going to, but actually seeing it in action, made a huge impact on us. Cause there were times where, you know, we struggled and we probably wouldn't have made it through without the support of our family. So they really pulled us through.
Ellie, who were the people that really stood out for you as support during that time?
I would just, you know, second what Jeff said, just really all of our extended family just helped in different ways. And sometimes it was the smallest thing that could make the biggest difference, you know, just even just an encouraging word over the phone or reminding you of what the end result is going to be and how worth it would be. And when you just would start to get discouraged, you know, just to have somebody to remind you of why you're doing all this when you're feeling discouraged about things. So,
and it's, you know, it's easy to think, you know, someone might lend a helping hand for a charity or, you know, something like that. Oh, we're going to go help at a food bank or something like that. This is your family's business.
Right.
That's a lot more personal, isn't it?
Absolutely.
When people start to, you know, lend a hand, come grab a hammer or, you know, who are stripping floors or whatever for your business, for your livelihood, to support you. And not only you, but as you start this business, and the people you employ, that's going to create a livelihood for them as well. Right. So it's impacting a number of people. How long did it take then, did you say, to get the building ready?
The building itself was about an 8-month process, start to finish.
8 months.
Yeah.
So how did that match up with the business process, getting the building ready, and your timeline in terms of figuring out the product and the staff and everything else? How did that go? Did the timeline match up?
It did. We were kind of doing it simultaneously. Mm-hmm. I had, you know, Jeff was working on the construction side of things, and I was working on getting the business side of things going, and we actually had a few delays. So the staff that we had put together was wonderful and patient enough to like stick it out with us and wait for the final result.
And that's a big thing too, because, you know, they couldn't see the final result. They didn't know what we were what we were going towards. So they didn't have our same vision that we did. So for them to stick it out with us through that process when the building was looking like an ugly duckling, was a pretty huge thing.
And it was kind of a, you know, a huge step of faith for them to do this, to come into a place that, like you said, the ugly duckling.
Oh yes.
and a lot of them have been with you through this whole process. I know that the staff changes from time to time, as it does in any business, but a lot of them have stayed with you through this. And now you said 3 years?
Years in March, yeah.
Has been there. And things are going well. What about the clients that you've had along the way? And a lot of them longtime clients, I'm sure. What difference do they make in your business?
I think that's been the biggest blessing of anything, was just being able to meet and get to know and touch so many different people's lives through the last couple of years. And the support from them has been tremendous. And mm-hmm. we were so well received where we are. And they've also been really patient with us through the whole process as we've tried to figure things out as we go. We'd never owned a business before, so there's been a lot of little hiccups and things that have happened along the way, and everyone's been so patient with us, and it's been really great.
I think that has a lot to do with the environment that you create for the guests, for the clients when they come in. It's not a stressful environment when they walk in the door. You know, when you walk in the door, it's a calm and relaxing environment, which you want a salon and a spa to be. You know, you expect it to be a calm and relaxing place. So I think people are a lot more patient when you create that environment, that it's a relaxing place. Probably has a lot to do with your personality too. that's what makes it a calm place. Throughout this journey that you've spent from the idea of owning your own business, to preparing to be a stylist, to hammer and nails and all the construction and building up a client base, getting to know your clients throughout this whole process, what have you learned? What have each of you learned from this? And what do you think the kids have gained from this? You've got four children. What do you think they've learned from your family business?
I think they've learned a lot about hard work. There's been a lot of hard work that's gone into it. Mm-hmm. You know, as far as getting the business going, there are good things and bad things about owning a business. You know, it's great. It's provided us some of that freedom that we've been looking for. It's gotten us definitely to the next level as far as that goes. But there are times where you would love a weekend. And even if you're not necessarily working, as long as the salon's open, there are always questions and always mm-hmm. things that come up. So it's been a blessing for sure. But there are definitely things that we want to improve on and keep moving forward with.
What have you learned, Ellie?
Well, I've been in the salon industry since I was actually 15. Wow. I started out as a shampoo assistant and went to cosmetology school while I was attending high school, actually. So I've been in the industry for quite a while. So I think for me, I've learned throughout the process, my goal would always be to try to take bits and pieces of every place that I've worked and everyone that helped coach me and encourage me through the years in my career, and bring it all together into one place to have the best parts of all of those experiences. I feel like it's been a hard lesson sometimes about finding balance between work life and family life. Mm-hmm. Cause there, you feel like you're pulled in a lot of different directions.
Sure.
Every day. So just making sure that you keep your priorities where they need to be, and, you know, is a big lesson.
What do you think the kids have learned or gained from this?
Just perseverance, you know, just that when things get hard, you don't quit, mm-hmm. you just keep going, and that,
yeah, to be able to press on.
Yeah, yeah.
What a blessing to be able to, for them to see what you do on a regular basis, for them to understand to some degree from a child's perspective that that this is hard work, and that, you know, having a job is hard work. But at the same time, they get to see some of those payoffs too. They get to see that you're happy mm-hmm. with the work that you do, even though it might be stressful at times. Yes. They also get to see that too. They get to see mom and dad enjoying their work.
Yes.
So what lies down the road? Opening 12 more salons?
I think we got a lot of learning and growing with the one we've got, so we're going to focus on the one we have for now.
Anything else down the road that you're, any other hopes or plans, or where do you hope to go from here?
I don't know. I think I just would like to really nurture the salon that we have and just keep it growing. And
there's always new challenges with the one that we have. So we're not not looking to franchise or anything like that. But I think just getting better and better at what we do, becoming better owners every day, and just really taking it and using it as a platform to have people see the hard work that, that Ellie's put into it, and see that she does keep that family balance throughout it. So I think we're just going to keep growing and learning and pressing on from here.
Mm-hmm. How has having a strong faith been a part of this process? How has the confidence that God has given you in his word, in Jesus, how has that been a support for you throughout this this whole journey?
For myself, I feel like it's been a really good platform to be able to get involved with other places that need help, whether it's a food bank or Mercy Ministries or other places where I can serve. And it's also a great opportunity for me to witness and to talk to people and to hear their stories and to kind of be that person in their life that can show them compassion and love. I've appreciated that a lot, to be able to do that.
What a blessing to be able to have this connection with the community and to have the support of your family. With about a minute left, anybody you want to give a shout out to or a thanks to today as we wrap up our time together?
I just want to thank our family, thank our friends who have supported us throughout the whole thing. There's been hard times, there's been good times, and those people who stuck by us regardless of what we were going through and how miserable and it probably was to be our family or friend at that time.
Yes.
We appreciate it, you know.
And to all of our clients that have supported us through everything and come and visit us all the time, and to the kids for being patient with us.
And they're good kids.
Great.
They're pretty good kids.
Yeah, they're great kids. Well, thank you so much for being with us today and being our guests. We've been talking with Jeff and Ellie Koopman of, and Maya Koopman of El Salon and Spa in Eureka, Missouri. Jeff, thanks for being in studio with us today.
Thank you very much.
And Ellie, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you.
Maya, thanks for being here today. Well, I know that you guys have some kids to go round up with all this weather and the schools being called off soon. So thanks for being our guest. Coming up in the next segment, we're going to get a preview of the February edition of Lutheran Witness. We're going to talk with Reverend Phil Zielinski and Reverend Jonathan Connor about their articles in the 2014 February edition of Lutheran Witness. Stick around for more Faith and Family right here on listener-supported Worldwide KFUO.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration in action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
The man is a lone voice crying out in the wilderness, and I'm not talking about John the Baptist. I'm referring to Congressman Dan Lipinski from Illinois. Dan's a true blue pro-lifer down to his toes, and he's a Democrat. Their species is almost as rare in Washington, D.C. as a dinosaur. And he was the only Democrat addressing Congress during a special session observing the anniversary of Roe v. Wade. Later, when Dan addressed us at a dinner in D.C., he pled with us not to let abortion become a single-party issue. In other words, all Republican. But it's not we who are making it this way. It's the cowardly Democrats who turn their backs on America's unborn babies and their mothers. We owe Mr. Lipinski a debt of gratitude for holding firm under pressure.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
St. Paul writes in Ephesians 5, "Wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord, for the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, his body, and is himself its Savior. Now as the church submits to Christ, so also wives should submit to their husbands in everything." Are these words of law and domination, or words of mercy and the gospel, or both? We'll be talking about this and much more on the next Bible study.
Weekdays at 10 a.m. on KFUO.
Hello, I'm Rod Zwanitzer, Director of Broadcast for KFUO. We totally depend on the gracious supporters who want this gospel voice to continue and expand as the messenger of good news of Christ. A wonderful part of this support is our underwriters, an ever-increasing number, and so we ask you to find out who they are by checking them out on our website or as you hear them here on KFUO. Write, call, or tell them how much you appreciate their support of Worldwide KFUO.
Confessions of a Potentially Perfect Parent, brought to you by AdoptUsKids.org.
I don't know how to talk like a parent. Don't make me come back there. You see what I mean? It's pretty awful. Try it again. Don't make me come back there. Now that's pretty good. That one kind of sounded like my dad. Weird.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to put up with you. Call 1-888-200-4005 or visit AdoptUsKids.org for more information. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
An attorney representing an Indiana homeschool group says a state commission intruded in the group's religious affairs when it found that it discriminated against a girl with a food allergy. But a lawyer for the girl's family says the Catholic homeschool group is guilty of discrimination based on disability. The girl's family says she's allergic to chicken, and the group wouldn't provide an alternative meal at a dinner dance. Instead, the organization told the mother she could bring food for the girl. After the girl's family complained to the state, the family was expelled from the group. Patrick Gillen, who represented the homeschool group, told the state Supreme Court that the Indiana Civil Rights Commission should not have stepped into the dispute.
Civil rights law has been applied in a way that is inconsistent with the fundamental rights to religious liberty.
But Nelson Nettles, who represented the girl, said,
"Really, we're talking about not religious discrimination, but we're talking about discrimination against people with disabilities."
The homeschool group had only 11 member families. I'm Steve Coleman.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates, and we are continuing our conversations this week. We've been talking about the Seventh Commandment all week. We're going to take a look at a little preview of the February 2014 Lutheran Witness. Joining us by phone today is Reverend Philip Zielinski, pastor of Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Van Wert, Ohio, and also author of the Believe Boldly column titled Big Spenders in this current edition of Lutheran Witness. Good morning, Pastor Zielinski.
Good morning, Andy. How are you?
Great. Good to have you with us today.
Thanks for having me.
I guess where you are, it's afternoon, so I should say good afternoon over there. How are things in Van Wert, Ohio today?
We are anticipating the snow and weather that I think that St. Louis has already had, and just continuing to dig out and brace for the next storm.
It's not too bad in parts of St. Louis. The southern half is not too bad. The north side of St. Louis, I think, got a little snow this morning, and we're expecting it in about a couple of hours here. So it might be a little bit later getting to you. We'll see. But I hope you're hunkered down and ready to wait it through.
Nice to have the parsonage near the church here, where we can keep working and be able to join you here today. It's great.
Very good. Very good. Well, I'm glad that you're working, because I'm going to put you back to work as we're talking about your article in the February 2014 Lutheran Witness, the hashtag Believe Boldly column titled Big Spenders. And much of this this issue of Lutheran Witness is about the giving, stewardship, all that God has entrusted to us is really what this issue is about. And your column entitled Big Spenders with a dollar sign for the capital S there on the front of it takes us back to our days as youth. The Believe Boldly column, generally a column aimed at a youth audience, asks, you know, want to be treated like an adult? Learn what the Lord has already given you in your youth. And when it comes to stewardship, we often ask how much, or in reality, how little and how often. And is stewardship just about money? Why do we ask these things, Pastor Zielinski?
Well, we are always asking, you know, how much, or is it enough, or, you know, when have I sort of fulfilled my responsibility, because we're because of worry, we're concerned about, will I have enough to fulfill? You know, when we get older, we're asking, you know, can we pay the bills? Will I be able to provide for my family? And when we're younger, I think we're asking more questions along the lines of, will I be able to enjoy myself the way I want to? Will I be able to? You know, some of us are even prudent enough to have been saving and planning for college ahead, and so it's the long term concerns of. Will I have enough if I give of what I already have? And so we start looking for, well, you know, I certainly don't want to sin in my stewardship and in my generosity toward God. And so I want to make sure I've fulfilled what He's asked of me, and then I can go do whatever I want with whatever I have left over. And that's kind of a bit of a wrong-headed approach to it, because instead of thinking in terms of, you know, will I have enough after I've given to God, or to the work of the church, or God's work through the church, we can really think in terms of, has God ever let me down? Has God ever left me without enough? And then we can respond in joyfulness in our giving instead of worry.
How much do I need to give in order to avoid sinning? I think it sounds like what we're summing it up here as that goes the way of the law, doesn't it?
It is. You know, when we talk about generosity or stewardship, we are going the way of the law. It is from the Old Testament on, God prescribed offerings, and for the Old Testament church, it was definitely very prescribed. You know, so many bowls, so many ephahs of flour, so many, you know, different types of offerings and things. And in the New Testament, we're really set free from the quantitative responsibilities of those offerings, and in Christ being our full offering for sin. But it is the way of the law. It is, you know, how much is enough is a law question, and so it's a question that we're not going to be able to answer, that we're not going to be able to fulfill, because we cannot fulfill the law. Christ has fulfilled that for us, and in the New Testament, you know, we have in the Old Testament we had the concept of the tithe, and so many Christians, when they approach their management of God's gifts to them, they think in terms of a tithe or of a 10%. But I think even there we've started off in a direction that's gonna leave us wanting, because even the tithe itself, the idea of giving 10% in the Old Testament, didn't encompass all the offerings that the people gave. So it was much more than 10% that they were being generous with, and certainly in the New Testament we see that as the New Testament church had all things in common, and as anybody had need, they gave. And it comes down to what Christ had said, render unto Caesar what is Caesar, and to God what is God's. God's given us everything. And so maybe that's the upper limit, mm-hmm. of what we have to give as He's given us.
When did you learn about faithful stewardship?
Growing up, there was always the opportunity to put something in the offering plate. I do this now with my girls. We give them a quarter, and so they each have something in their hands to place into the plate. And that's what I remember growing up with. I would be given something to put in the offering plate when it would go by, and to develop that habit of of giving. You know, it wasn't something I had earned at that point. But then as I begin to understand, you know, the concept of I had birthday money or Christmas money gifts coming in, and some of that would then be set aside to go into the offering plate. And my first job as a paper boy, setting that money aside, and I shared the story with in the article about I was a salesperson at Sears in the sporting goods department when I got my first, you know, sort of real paycheck. And by that point, it was I knew I had to do something with it because I had already had that foundation laid.
And so how did you make that transition from you know, what your parents provided for you? You know, I'm just thinking your parents gave so freely to you. Now this is your hard-earned money that you earned, and it's your money. So there's a different perspective, I think, on that when it's my money that I earned as opposed to something my parents gave me, right?
Well, and that's where my sinful nature reared its head and said, well, now you have to decide how much. Now you have to make that decision of, well, you know, I've got X number of dollars, and some of those I'm not going to be using for my own enjoyment. And that's when the sinful nature starts asking the questions of how much is enough. And probably either talking with my parents or at youth group or something, we began wrestling with those ideas of how much is enough.
Why is it valuable to learn about faithful stewardship when you're young, when you're a youth like that?
Oh, like so many so many things in our lives as Christians, the foundations that are laid in our youth set the pattern for later in life, and even in our youth in the faith, to those who come to faith later in life, what we are exposed to and what we are given early on in our faith walk sets the patterns for later in life as well. Like any habit, they're hard to break and they're hard to change. And so the sooner we can develop a mindset or a familiarity with being generous with the gifts God's given us, the better and the easier it will be to continue that later on in life, as you have to then set budgets and savings and plan ahead. You've already got the first step being, I set some aside to give thanks to God for what he's given me.
And I appreciate that you point out that the gifts from God, because it's more than just money, isn't it, when we're stewards of gifts?
Oh, yes. Yeah. We're given many gifts at any given time. You know, we're given abilities and interests that we have. We're given our time every day. You know, we all have 24 hours a day to give for something, and we have to manage that somehow. We make schedules, and when we're in school or college or high school, you know, many of those schedules are set for us. And as we get into the workforce, and you're in the military or something, homemakers all have schedules and time that we have to manage and be good stewards of, and some of that includes setting it aside for our own spiritual growth, but also setting aside some to be in service to the work of the gospel according to our individual callings.
Amen. Well, I don't want to give away the whole article. I want everybody to read it, so I don't want to give away everything that is in the article. So I want to encourage folks to check out the February edition of Lutheran Witness and go check out that Believe Boldly column by Pastor Philip Zielinski, pastor of Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Van Wert, Ohio. Thanks so much for giving us some of your time today and talk about your column.
Oh, my privilege to be with you, and I appreciate the opportunity, and God's blessings to you guys and your work there, and throughout the week.
Thanks. God's blessings to you. Stay safe in the upcoming weather.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Coming up in the next segment, we're going to talk with Pastor Jonathan Connor, pastor of Zion Lutheran Church in Manning, Iowa, about his article, The Family Matters Column, in this edition of Lutheran Witness. Stick around. More right here on Faith and Family on Worldwide KFUO.
This week on Lamplighter Theater.
I will hunt you down. I will organize an army to find you and kill you, Julius!
What?
What is it?
Isabel!
What was in the newspaper?
14 enemies of the state executed. The Baron Jacques Darrow.
Don't miss the next Lamplighter Theater here on this station.
Saturday mornings at 11 on Worldwide KFUO.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. We are talking about the current issue of Lutheran Witness, giving you a little bit of preview of some of the columns in there. And we're going to talk about the Family Matters column. Joining us by phone today, Reverend Jonathan Connor, pastor of Zion Lutheran Church in Manning, Iowa. Good morning, Pastor Connor.
Good morning.
Good to have you with us today.
Thank you.
How are things in Manning, Iowa?
Fantastic.
Wonderful. Is it getting kind of chilly there?
Yeah, we're chilly and we got snow, but otherwise it's normal Iowa weather.
Very good. Well, you wrote the article, the Family Matters column this month for Lutheran Witness called Cheer in Giving. And you paint a picture for us with children and their giving in church and ask the question or make us consider as adults, we're quick to try to teach children about Christian stewardship, but maybe there's something we can learn from them first.
Absolutely.
What can we learn from children? What do children teach us about stewardship?
Well, we have a tradition in our congregation. It's a children's offering time where during the normal offering, there's a basket in the front of the congregation, and the children typically have adopted a missionary or a special project at the church, and every week they bring their offering up front for that segment, and they give toward that project or that missionary. And it is one of the neatest things to watch this wave of children making their way to the front, and oftentimes the other ushers, the ushers for the regular offering, they're weaving in and out of the children. And you have siblings carrying younger siblings, cousins taking up their friends, that they're visiting, they're taking them up front. You've got kids who, I've even seen kids kind of looking with a competitive eye to see if he can beat his other friend up to the front to get the money into the plate. And I think there's certainly an illustration of joy in giving right there in that act.
Why are children cheerful givers?
Well, if you think about it, most of these children aren't giving away their own money. And that's a good lesson for us to learn. So, yeah, there's the element of cheer we can learn from children on one sense, but it's a deeper level. They're cheerful because it's not their money. And, you know, think about it. If someone gave you a pile of money and said, here, you go, put it in the plate, it really wouldn't be too difficult to do because we have no vested interest, so forth, in that money. But that's the whole point, is that as recipients of God's blessings, his gifts upon gifts that he gives to us, that and we are all quick to say, oh, yes, none of it's mine, it's all God's. But that's true, and when we grasp that, and that we're privileged then to give a portion of this to the Lord and for the work of the church, what a joy that is and how liberating it is to grasp that lesson from children.
What changes then as adults? why are we not as cheerful sometimes as adults about giving? What happens to us?
Well, in a word, prosperity happens to us. That's what happens. And you know, I in the article I give a quick little thought experiment. If someone gave you a dollar and then encouraged you to give 10 cents, most of us could do that without much difficulty. And if they gave you $1,000. Could probably part with 100, but if they gave you $1 million and asked you to part with 100,000, well, suddenly we would struggle tremendously. Well, the proportion hasn't changed. It's what's changed is our hearts, because money has this incredible power over our hearts, almost gravity sort of thing. It would just the more money we have, more stuff we have, the harder it is to part with it. And statistics bear that out in terms of people's income. Their dollar amount might increase as they have more, but percentage-wise, it tends to go down the more dollars we have.
Really? That's interesting. The more money we have, the less we are, percentage-wise, to share or to give.
Absolutely. I mean, there are studies showing that the Great Depression, percentage-wise, outgave us, percentage-wise. That's an eye-opener.
Hmm. Well, in your article, in your column, you paint a picture for us. You reference C.S. Lewis mm-hmm. and the Screwtape Letters. What is it that the devil and the world do to change our attitudes about giving?
Well, he has this great quote in the Screwtape Letters, and I just have a portion of it in the article. I highly recommend anyone, if you haven't read it, get a copy of it and read it. But he has the senior devil training the junior devil on how to, and strategies of getting his person away from, quote, the enemy, and that's God. And he's talking about two different tacks to take. One would be adversity, and he says, that's effective. You can pull people away in adversity from God. He says, if, however, in the middle years, if they prove prosperous, our position is even stronger. And he says this is incredibly profound. Prosperity knits a man to the world and gives him a sense of being really at home on earth, which is just what we want. That's, think about that for a while. That's powerful.
Being at home on earth, being comfortable.
Right. Being comfortable. And so he uses this phrase, prosperity knits a man to the world. It gives him a sense of really being at home on earth.
Mm-hmm.
Well, exactly. I mean, so one of the ways that the Satan could work in our culture and in our own hearts is by multiplying our material blessings. Now, are material blessings wrong? No, absolutely not. The question becomes then, if there's an inherent risk of material wealth or material things knitting us to the world, what's the answer to prevent that? Well, it's giving. That's what's going to break the stitches, if you will, and that Satan would attempt to sow or to use to attach us to the world.
And that's an interesting picture, being sown or attached to the world.
Mm-hmm.
There's a good quote from your article here. Giving rips the constrictive Satan-sown stitches and frees us to pursue more lasting treasure.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so Jesus says in Matthew 6, right? Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. We get this backwards all the time. Here's his point. Our hearts always follow our treasure. I mean, just think about it. I have a car that I've been driving now for the last 14 years. And honestly, it doesn't bother me anymore when my kids scratch it or ding it. They do whatever they want to it. I don't care. It's not worth anything. But I can guarantee if I drove a new car home from work next week, my heart would be very much invested in that because my heart follows my treasure.
Yeah, when it's shiny and new, you just don't want scratches on it. You don't want any stains on the inside. Nobody spilling sippy cups or
mm-hmm,
anything like that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, you want it to stay nice and clean. So how do we get back to this cheer in giving how do we approach giving? How can we approach children giving like children and maintain that cheer in giving?
Well, I think one thing we need to ask ourselves is where do we want our hearts to be? And that question is a question we need to think about pretty seriously. Where do we want our heart to be? Well, I think we would answer, if we thought about it, we want our heart to be in heaven or in the kingdom of God, to be with Christ. We want to be according to his purposes, to be aligned with that. Well, if that's the case, and Jesus says our heart will follow our treasure, then the next question is then, well, where should we put our treasure? Well, then our treasure should then be put with God, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we could learn a little bit from another quote by C.S. Lewis, which is not in the article. But he talks about this amount we are to give. And I think that's a good question. And he says, I don't think we can settle how much we ought to give. He says, I'm afraid the only safe rule is to give more than we can spare. In other words, if our expenditure or comforts, luxuries, amusements, etc., is up to the standard common among those with the same income as our own, you're probably giving away too little. If our charities do not at all pinch or hamper us, I should say they're too small. There ought to be things we should like to do and cannot do because our charitable expenditure excludes them. Well, that's thoughtful, isn't it?
Hmm.
I mean, I think the idea is, and we seriously need to consider, I hear people say lots of times, and the tithe obviously is a freedom thing. People are free to choose to tithe or free not to tithe. But we use the tithe as a helpful starting point for getting a gauge on giving. But I've heard people say, I can't afford to tithe. And that may be the case. But considering we're the wealthiest people ever to live on the face of the planet, and we have luxuries that kings and queens in former times knew nothing of, it's a little bit of a concern to say we can't afford to tithe. I would suspect, if we were honest with ourselves, and this is where it's, you know, it's painful because being honest with yourself is hard, is that what we can't afford is our lifestyle. And so getting back to the cheer in giving then is fully grasping who the giver is and understanding this concept with children. When they're sitting in the pew and grandma or grandpa or mom or dad hands them money and they cheerfully run up to the front to drop it in the plate, we stand in the same relationship with God. He places it in our hands, and we have the privilege to give. What an amazing thought. We have the privilege to give. And I think that's a way to find cheer.
Sure. If we realize all these things, that all these earthly blessings that God has given us, including our vocations, our jobs, our income, if we understand those to be gifts from God, then it's a privilege to be able to give part of that back to his work.
Absolutely. I think that we worship a God of gifts. And what a neat image. I just love the idea of our God being a God of gifts. And he just fills our hands with his gifts. And we have the amazing privilege of showing our thankfulness, of responding with generosity, and giving. And that's a neat, neat privilege we have.
So next Sunday, are you going to change it around so that the offering for the whole congregation, give them a chance to run down to the...
That might not be a bad idea.
That might be dangerous.
It could be. But I tell you, the congregation loves that tradition. They love seeing the children. I mean, you have lots and lots and lots of them making their way to the front to give, and that's so neat.
And you're right. It sets an example for us that what we have been entrusted with is simply a gift. Mm-hmm. It is truly a gift. It's not ours solely. Sure, we might have a job in which we earn money, but the job, the ability that we have, all gift from God, so that we might return to him a portion of that gift cheerfully and joyfully, just like as simply as children do.
Yes.
Well, what a great lesson for us. I want to encourage folks to check it out in the February 2014 Lutheran Witness, which is probably in mailboxes about now. It should be heading, the print edition should be heading your way. If you don't have the current edition of Lutheran Witness, if you're not a subscriber, go check it out. Go to concordiapublishinghouse.cph.org/ witness, and you can find out more. They even have electronic version, so I encourage our listeners to go check it out. Read Pastor Connor's column, the Family Matters column this month, and also Pastor Zielinski's column, The Believe Boldly, and lots of other good articles in there as well this month, so all good stuff. Well, Pastor Connor, thanks so much for taking some time today to talk with us about your Family Matters column in Lutheran Witness.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And hopefully from that we can learn, take the time to learn from children about being cheerful in our giving.
Absolutely.
God's blessings to you and the folks at Zion in Manning, Iowa.
You as well. Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Coming up later on this week, we'll continue our conversations on the seventh commandment. We'll talk with our friends from Lutheran Housing Support, National Housing, about how they provide for neighbors, how they help neighbors take care of their income and possessions and provide for their needs as well. And later on this week, we'll also talk with the program directors of the Director of Christian Education Programs at Concordia Universities across the U.S. So I hope you can join us for that conversation as well. Stick around for Moments of Assurance up next right here on Listener Supported Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.